Blog Talk Radio.
Shift. It's time to awaken consciousness. It's time for empowerment. It's time to create your ideal life. It's time to deploy the Awakened Life Excel process. If you're a freedom-loving soul, we love entrepreneurship, wellness, holistic health, fitness, and other life-enriching discussion. This is part of our Awakened series. This is Carol Ann Parisi, and I have Nancy G with me. Hey, Nance, how you doing on this fine day?
Oh, marvelously hot.
Marvelously hot. That's kind of cool. Does that mean you're hot or you're just warm?
The temperature is very hot.
Okay.
And I'm actually having to use the air conditioner.
Oh, wow. Nancy's below the Mason-Dixon line, so it's warm there. Well, Nance, last week we discussed something called will. Indomitable will. Major definitiveness of purpose will. And I guess there's several components within the will. And one of them is commitment, the C word, the good C word. Give me what you think commitment is, and let's talk about commitment today and how that can impact one's life on a profoundly deep level. And there might be a duality here that we could discover, and give me a few words and thoughts on commitment that you have.
Commitment in many different capacities. Of course, people know the commitment of a relationship.
Let's go there. That's actually a really good place to start.
I think so.
Let's peel back the C word in regard to relationships. So there's several kinds of relationships. Any specific you want to bring forward, or do you want to just? Let's talk about marriage and commitment.
Exactly where I was going to go.
Okay. because let's be real, not all marriages work out, right?
Most of them do not. Just only a small percentage of marriages stay together. I have to give you kudos on yours, of course, because I will tell you that you are the single most longest married friend that I have ever had.
Really? Well, okay, you know what? And I'm not going to, this is not a personal Carol Parisi show, like, oh my gosh, but here's the deal. I'm going to tell you why. My husband came from a divorced family and saw what it did to him and his brother when the parents, you know, had to break that marriage vow as a child. And I saw a mom die of ovarian cancer at 44 years old, where my father was committed and devoted to her, spent every day after work at the hospital with her till 7, 8 o'clock at night. So Mark saw the lack of that commitment in marriage. I saw that deep and profoundly, you know, undying love and commitment, and I think that probably gave both of us I knew that if I had to find someone that would be as devoted to me as my husband, as my father was to my mom. So that's kind of,
right.
I think that was a bad experience brought forth in a good way. My husband's bad
right.
experience of seeing a non-committed relationship and how it hurt him and his brother as they grew and how it took him a long time to commit. I think that's, I don't know. I mean, that is my hypothesis, so I could be wrong. So thank you for that. But I think there are reasons why, and the roads that we journeyed maybe brought us together to be committed to each other. Any other thoughts?
Right.
Any thoughts on? We dated for 5 years too, by the way. So.
Right. Well, that's a really smart thing that I always advise young people. But the components of that successful commitment was that you were determined, that there was an amount of sense of responsibility to that other person. And putting that other person, I don't know, I think commitment is actually putting that other person, if you want to say, at the same importance level as you, but I think like in marriage and in parent-child relationships, I think the commitment is that you put them before yourself.
Well, you know, I agree with that, yes, but you can't do that all the time because that's when I think women are getting down a road of where they start losing themselves because they've put everybody first. Now, here's the deal. It's situational. You've got a 2-month-old nursing baby that needs to be fed, and you're tired, too bad, so sad, buck up, buttercup. But if you've got a 3-year-old toddler that's just having a hissy fit and everything is okay, it's just this little – you know, baby whining. You know what, dude? You can wait. You can wait. Mommy's got to go potty right now, okay? You're going to wait. So, but, yes, I mean, I think, yes, you put them before yourself in ways, but I grew up in that. You and I both grew up in that time when it was that transition where women stayed home, but then women actually did go to work, and we were part of that swing generation where women were finally starting to, you know, to come into the workforce in a different way and be a little more independent, you know. I don't know. It's kind of interesting that you say that. How was your mom? How was your mom? Was your mom a servant to the family, or did she do her own thing and serve the family committedly?
Well, some of both. When we were very young, she was the mom at home with the 3 p.m. snack and, yep. you know, and all that. I wouldn't say, it's the Ozzie Harriet the thing, because the part that they don't show you on the TV shows is that there is disagreements and there is the siblings squabbling with each other that need to be corrected and so forth. But as far as her devotion level, I would say that most of the time, and you knew my mom, she put others first. You know, maybe to her detriment in certain respects, because then she wasn't as aware of all the things that she needed and, you know, medically and so forth. But as far as if you asked my mom to do something, no matter what it was, and it was within her ability to get up and physically do it for you or call and arrange it for you, she would do it. In a heartbeat, without any expectations of anything in it for herself. Her motivations were purely to help the other person, and there was no selfish motivation in there whatsoever. And then she did go back to work once we all got, middle school and high school age. Then she found herself, not needing to be that matriarch so much at home. And so then she was able to branch out a little bit and do something that, you know, would get her out into the world and, you know, make a few extra bucks and whatnot. So, you know, it was typical to an extent. And then my parents were, even though of that generation, they were hippie minded as far as their parenting style, but they were not hippies.
Okay. See, my mom was a little different. My mom actually came from Italy and came in a situation where her mom had to work because they were pursuing the American dream. So my mom actually took care of her siblings. But I will tell you something. My mom was the mom. I remember coming home and brownies were made and, you know, would do stuff. But as we got older, especially my brother was maybe 5 or 6, she stayed home for both of us. But when my brother got into kindergarten, my mom got a little job at the school You know, she was like the lunchroom playground supervisor, so she got to, you know, play with the kids and be, you know, be off of work when we were off of school, and it gave her a little mad money, spending money. And when she started doing it, see, my mom never drove, but so that kind of kept her kind of solitary, although we had public transportation, and she was a walker, so she could walk to public transportation. But after I got to be about maybe 13, my mom started finding other friends that she met at work and would go to Bible study and would go to, you know, ladies' luncheons. And, you know, she was always the mom. She helped. She was there for everything. But I saw that she also had her own life, and she served us all, but she took care of herself, too. I mean, she always made sure her hair was colored, and she had her makeup on, and her, she was always, she would sew clothes for herself. So my mom kind of did, like, all that kind of stuff. It was kind of good, but I had a boyfriend once, and this is what scared me to death about old school moms and wives, is that this woman married a guy who had some means, and she had nothing but a couple kids, and he adopted both of her kids, right? All three of her kids, actually. So she was a single mom with three kids. She met this guy, and he was, you know, he provided finances for her, but she waited on him hand and foot. She would be downstairs folding laundry in the basement, and he would yell, and I'm not even going to use her name, so this isn't even her name, Sally Joe, come and change the television station and bring me a beer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What chagrins you and I to death. Like, if anyone said that, it'd be like, get off your own ass and get your own beer.
If they're healthy and they're just sitting on their keister doing nothing and I'm being productive. No, you know what? My husband will be sitting on the couch. We'll be sitting together. And it's like, oh, honey, can I get you something? You know, I'll get up. I don't mind. But if I'm doing something else, you know, it's like, really? Really? And, I mean, you know, so, but that's that, there's that generation, and that's all they did. And, I mean, there was a lot of them. Now, I had a grandma who was born in 1899, and she was in a committed relationship. They were married till the day they died to each other. You know what I'm saying? They were married till she died, and then he died, you know, several years later. But she was, my grandma Esther was kind of a character. She's a very committed character to her family, to her children, to her husband. But she was like a little roaring 20s flapper gal. And her dad brought home a Model T for the boys. And she grabbed her sister Emma on the farm and she said, Emma, he brought that home. And she loved and respected her father, served her father. In fact, her mother died when she was 12 and she was the oldest. So she had to bake the bread and do everything for the whole family, right? She grabbed Emma. She's like, Emma, he brought this home for the boys. Let's go drive this car.
I would have liked her.
She was a sexy lassie, Miss Esther. And I'll tell you a little beauty.
Her time. She was a rebel woman way before
that. She was a rebel
woman.
She was a good and godly woman. She baked bread for her family. She ran. She stayed at home, but she helped my grandpa. My grandpa was a painter and ran a small business, and she did all the books. And she did. I mean, she was like that old school iron rock wife. But my grandma used to have a cute saying, and you're going to appreciate this. And remember, we're talking about commitment. But grandma was committed to her family. But grandma had a saying, the man is the head of the household, but the woman is the neck, and the neck tells the head which way to go.
That's better than saying she
had
wild hair. I think your grandma had a wild hair.
So let me ask you a question. So we're talking about some very good committed relationships. What happens when committed relationships break down? What do you think happens? And, you know, I mean, there are times clearly people have to walk away. I mean, there are clearly times where you're committed and you're being either physically abused, mentally abused, someone's drama is just overwhelming to you. You know, that commit, you've got to be committed to your own sanity and peace of mind, too. But
commitment is a two-way street. Both of the parties in any commitment, whether that's a business partnership commitment, just a working together for the day for a common goal, commitment, even just for the day, both parties have to be all in. Otherwise, that's when
they have to be all in at the same time. Do you think they have to both be in all in at the same time? Because sometimes...
No, I think the intention has to be that I'm all in on this project. Sometimes you'll be stronger, sometimes I'll be stronger, sometimes I need a stay and need a course correction, and you'll be the one to point it out, you know, in hopefully the most constructive, positive, loving way that you can.
Right.
And, you know, and the point is that we're both seeing this purpose for being in this committed situation. There's a purpose to it. And then we agree on the purpose, and then the journey can unfold. But we know it's all about setting your intention. So when you take your marriage vows, like we're on that subject, you take your marriage vows, at that time you're setting your intention to be devoted to each other, to only be with each other, to put each other as the priority of making decisions for the relationship. And so that kind of, you know, holds over into every aspect of your life.
In good times and in bad. I know before my husband and I got married, we got married in a Catholic church, and there was something called pre-Cana. And actually it was kind of like where we discussed our relationship and how we were going to, like, manage our household. And I'm very comfortable having my husband manage the resources, the monetary resources. Because, let's face it, I always expected him to be the heavy. I didn't have to really, I mean, the first few years we were married, I did most of the heavy lifting. But then after a few years, I mean, had, you know, 5 years, I had Michael, and he started doing well. But anytime I went back to work, when he started, you know, doing the household, I mean, my money was my own. But we still were always very conscious. If we're going to be spending, especially when we first bought our house and we were on that really strict, more budgety thing, you know, if we're going to spend more than X amount of dollars, you know, it's accountability to each other because of this commitment we made that we have to discuss it. You know what I'm saying? And it really, because most couples fight about money a lot. You know what I'm saying? That's a big argument of people.
It's one of the top three, right? It's one of the top three.
What are the top three that hurt committed marriage relations? And then we'll move on to business.
That'll be a source of irritation. Money, faithfulness, and I'm trying to think of the third. Oh,
money.
Usually the third one is about
what
money, faithfulness.
Oh, so you're talking about people that commit, like, adultery.
Right. The third one is disagreements on how to raise children.
Wow. Okay, really? Oh, wow. See, that faithfulness should just be, like, a no-brainer. Other relationships other than, like, okay, let's say someone's married to someone and that person's, you know, sibling takes up all one of the partner's time all the time. You know, it's not always, you know, adulterous people that take, you know, one away from the other for that enriching relationship. Sometimes people choose friends or siblings over their spouse. And that's also kind of like, you know, you get married. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to be with that person all the time. You should all have friends and have your own life, too. But some people are real out of balance.
Yeah, workaholicness is another form of unfaithfulness, where they're so more devoted and committed
to their job or their business.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's times when you build, like you said. I mean, there's times where you build, and it's like, you know, sometimes you just got to do the building process. So, you know, you can't always be there all the time. I know there were a lot of times. Remember when I was hanging out with you when Michael was little and Mark was working, and
he had
his business out of state, and it was like, oh, my God, crazy stuff. So
right. But you know that you knew what his intentions were, and you knew that this was just a brief period of time, and then that would resolve itself, and it would go back to, you know, what you knew as normal for how, you know, you guys operated. And it would probably be even at a better level, because this situation would be resolved in one way, shape, form, or another.
Right. So let's, I think that we're actually, I think, you know, relationships, commitment to relationships makes for healthy marriages, providing both people have an equal commitment level to each other. Yes, there are ebbs and flows where there's times that, you know, some are going to have to, you know, be working. I mean, I'll tell you the coolest thing with my husband right now is dealing with my dad. I mean, his commitment to me has spilled over in a commitment to helping me serve my father in his elder years, which is really very, I mean, that's really cool. That's huge. Because I could see that also being, you know, a frustration point for him too, you know, and, you know, loving people through their, I mean, you know me, I save shit. I save stuff. I buy stuff. I mean, my husband lives with somebody who's a hoarder. I mean, I'm not hoarder buried alive where you've got little 12-inch tabs, but, you know, if I keep it the trajectory, not eliminate, it could be a, you know, I will not be there, that will not be something. But, I mean, I'm sure that has hurt a lot of marriages, that disease that I have a propensity towards. So there's that one. So you said something about business commitment, you know, to each relationship. And then I'd like to talk about commitment to goals and ideals, and we could go down that path in the last 10 minutes of our show. So what about business partnerships? Both partners have to be equally committed to the vision and the goal. There are going to be times simply when some partners are doing more heavy lifting and, you know, is that a fair thing? What do you think of that?
Well, I don't know about fair, but it depends on, I mean, I think when you start a business partnership, you need to see who's bringing what to the table. And at that point that partnership is formed, if you're let's call it the primary person, are you okay being the primary person and knowing that that's probably going to be your role in that situation? And, you know, I think just like picking a mate, you know, it's important to pick, like we were talked about before, it's important to pick good people to work with. So if you're at the level where you can be the more of the leader, suggester person, you know, and the other person is going to be more, I hate to say subservient, but that's kind of what comes to mind. But they're going to follow along with the program that you both agreed upon. And I think it's just being clear about your determination to make that situation what it should be, what the purpose and the goal is.
Well, I think we have got about 5 more minutes. But what I think, I've been on both ends of that situation. You know what I'm saying? Where, and not necessarily 100% monetary partner, but, you know, you set expectations. Well, this is what I can do. This is what I know I can do. I'm coachable on doing this. I mean, I got to tell you, I started an organization, you know, years ago, and I brought someone in, and I mean, I paid to incorporate it. I did everything. I'm the one who started it, brought this person in, and next thing I know, I see the name of my corporation that I started on a magazine and my picture and the mission statement that we had both, and in fact, our whole team put together was nowhere in this article. That was like a cold shot, you know. I mean, it turned out where it was okay, but that was kind of shocking. You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to figure out what you're talking about.
I'll tell you off air. I started an organization, had meetings, started putting a team together. One of the folks that I met said, I've got this person, and you guys would be great together. I had brought this person in just on good faith, believing that they were who they projected to be. Had a few meetings. 2 months later, this person takes off with another person, utilized the name of the organization, was on the front of a magazine cover talking about this organization, and we, like, 3 weeks before, all sat down with the team, and we put a mission statement together, and this person was part of it.
Oh, my.
Reading the magazine, I wasn't even asked to be part of the magazine. I didn't even know about it. When the magazine came out, believe me, the rest of the folks were like, Carol, did you know this? I'm like, I know, a little blindsided on this one. But this person had a completely and totally different mission statement. Needless to say, since I had the corporate papers, and I mean, I had most of the people that saw what happened. That other person was gone, but that was kind of shocking. That wasn't somebody who was committed to the vision. That was somebody who was committed to going ahead and using our organization as a stepping stone to further their own mouthpiece-ness.
But I would say that falls under unfaithful.
Yeah, unfaithful, duplicitous. But definitely, I'll tell you what, and when I started that organization, I had a definite commitment, and we actually achieved our goals because everybody in our organization, outside of this person, were committed. They were committed, and it was a commitment of the heart and tireless effort and indomitable will and whatever it takes. And what can I do to help? And what else can I do to help? And, hey, what else do you think we should do? And everybody was just, I mean, I led a team of maybe, you know, up to 50, 60 people at times, maybe even more. So it was it turned out to be a pretty incredible thing. But we just wanted to work with people that were committed to the mission, not committed to their own message and getting in different, you know, microphones and magazines. So, interesting little story. But commitment is an actual great tool and a key for success for many things. I mean, why do you think people, real quick, why do you think people lose commitment? Why? And we only have a minute left. So what makes people give up their commitments?
Gosh, maybe they lose their drive and they forget the mission that they're on and why they're on it. So I think the mission statement thing and being periodically reminded of what the end result or what goal they're working towards helps a lot, because you're going to have those down times where you're like, we're not getting anywhere. What's going on?
Right. Well, that's when you got to press the hardest. I would say distractions. I would say lack of indomitable willpower. Not thinking outside of the box, saying how could we do this better, being very, you know, pig-headed and block-headed. But you got to be single-minded and committed to the mission and the purpose. So
and have a good attitude.
Attitude is a huge one. Attitude is a good one, and when you're working with others, gratitude. So, I mean, there's relationship commitments, there's marriage commitments, business commitments, there's personal goal commitments. I've been on this weight loss journey, and I'd really deploy discipline and whatever it takes, and I mean, there have been days where I've been on my treadmill where I was so tired, I was, like, closing my eyes, and I'm like, I have to do 5 miles. I don't care, whatever it takes. So it's that whatever it takes is a good summation of commitment. Three words that you would think. I'd say whatever it takes is a good summation of commitment, and we've got 30 seconds. What do you say, Nance?
Yeah, I say persevere.
Love that word. Well, guess what?
Yep.
We're going to have to commit to be here next Monday. You've got other commitments next week. So I will be here next Monday at 5 o'clock on Awaken to Empowerment. This is Carol Ann Parisi and Nancy G. Thanking you for joining us today. Hopefully you will join us again next week. Hopefully you gained a little insight this week, and hopefully there was some empowering and encouraging words for anyone, any of our listeners to glean from. I want to thank you for joining us. And Nancy, you make it a great week. And any final words? We got 5 seconds, 4 seconds.
Nope.
All right. Well, make it a great week, everyone. Thanks. We'll catch you back here next Monday, 5 p.m. Central Time. And we're off here. Bye-bye.